This is KMBA News. I'm Trip Krause. In early 2021, the Harvard Peabody Museum issued a statement apologizing for its reluctance working with tribes to return some remains and funerary objects. The social unrest of 2020 reignited the conversation of returning ancestral remains and sacred objects to their people. We talk with stakeholders on both sides about the 30-year-old law created to return those items to their traditional homelands and whether it's working. Since contact, Indigenous people and settlers have had a contentious relationship, particularly as settlers appropriated items from traditional Native homelands. These items include totem poles, funerary and cultural objects, even remains of Indigenous ancestors. Examples include in the late 1800s when the Edward Harriman expedition removed a Tequedee memorial pole from southeast Alaska, or when anthropologist Alice Hurd Lischka, a Czech-born anthropologist in the early 1900s, known for unorthodox collection methods, discarded the remains of an infant found in a cradle board and sent it to the American Museum of Natural History.
They didn't have any shame, you know, taking it even from graves.
That's Rosita Worrell, the president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, a private nonprofit cultural organization based in Juneau, Alaska. Worrell earned her master's and doctorate in anthropology from Harvard University.
And this is what we have here in the associated funerary objects. They just came and, you know, took things off of graves. And so, I mean, gosh, when you think about Southeast, it was amazing that we even had anything left, you know.
Oftentimes, remains would be removed from tribes without consent or consultation and stored in university or museum collections, even in international institutions.
Museums themselves are institutions of colonialism. I mean, they came in, they expropriated cultural objects, human remains, and more often without the permission of Native American tribes and others. You know, what they saw as art, we saw as cultural objects.
And not until the early 1990s did the Indigenous people of the United States have much recourse. The Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA for short, gave tribes a legal avenue to pursue the return of remains in some funerary objects. Part of NAGPRA requires publicly funded universities and museums to document and report the remains and funerary objects within their collection. The summaries are searchable by institutions, states the remains are held, and even the state and general regions of origin. After a year filled with Black Lives Matter movement and toppling of colonial monument and statues, the Harvard Peabody Museum announced in January it had about 15 remains of African Americans or those of African descent who likely lived before 1865 and may have been enslaved. According to Museum Director Jane Pickering, the museum pledged to try and return those remains to the appropriate communities.
And so we felt that this was the moment that the university really needed to engage with this issue. There are other institutions that have been thinking along these lines as well, but that it was time for us to really face up to that history as a university, as an institution.
The release stated that a steering committee would help direct a multi-year cross-departmental initiative to assess the procedures. Harvard Peabody's collection includes several Alaska Native cultural objects and at least one report of remains from the Aleutians West region. In a January statement, Harvard Peabody said it was working toward consultations with tribes to return remains and funerary objects in compliance with NAGPRA, and it pledged to develop better policies to address its previous reluctance of turning over some objects. But tribes and Native-based organizations like the Association of American Indian Affairs pushed back and questioned the museum's process. Shannon O'Glaughlin is a citizen of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma and the chief executive and attorney for the association.
Harvard tends to cause delay, refuses to make decisions, and often causes extensive burden on tribes by forcing them to produce evidence of cultural affiliation.
O'Glaughlin says she's concerned Harvard-educated students would go on to other institutions and perpetuate the same harmful repatriation practices and procedures.
They have developed their inventories out of alignment with what NAGPRA requires, and they've done so by failing to consult with tribes before they completed their inventory process.
O'Glaughlin says a Harvard Peabody categorized some remains and items as culturally unidentifiable, which means tribes must provide even more evidence to make a claim.
Well, in the idea that that a people can have control and dominion over other peoples, to the extent of outlawing their religions and cultures and taking away those things that support that culture's identity and health, it's thinking about that, you know, today, that institutions still carry on that racism, the classism, ethnicism, whatever ism it is in that area, and aren't willing to recognize that, you know, much of their collections may be obtained from the theft and violence of other peoples.
Phil DeLoria is Standing Rock Sioux and a history professor at Harvard University, where he teaches subjects like environmental history and the American West. DeLoria says a 2010 amendment to NAGPRA is supposed to lay out other pathways to repatriate culturally unaffiliated or unidentified remains.
Kind of period. So in that early moment, you know, museums and institutions were required to prepare inventories, to consult with tribes on these inventories, with the goal of identifying as many kinds of remains and cultural objects that could be culturally affiliated with tribes. And there's a certain kind of set of standards, of evidence that NAGPRA suggests. And then, you know, many, many things end up in this kind of bucket of the culturally unidentified.
The Association of American Indian Affairs sent a letter urging Harvard Peabody to change its practices, and the organization CEO McLaughlin hopes that tribes have greater opportunity to go through the disposition process. More than 600 people and organizations signed on in support of the association's efforts. And DeLoria recognizes the amount of work a tribe must go through to make a claim, but says it's an important part of the process.
Yeah, I mean, it can be quite extensive. Basically, you know, the tribe needs to present, you know, as good a claim as it possibly can. And I think, as Jane said, and I'd just like to echo this, one of the ways in which that claim is as strong as it can be is through consultation. So, you know, tribe comes in bringing whatever kind of knowledge they have of the situation. You know, typically our folks at the Peabody would sit down with them, go through what we know, what we think we know, maybe develop a little bit of extra kind of research plan to sort of figure out if we can put those two things together and actually do better. And so reaching the sort of highest standard of, you know, of evidence in terms of making the claim and making the claim as strong as it, you know, as it can be. I mean, this is important for a number of reasons. I tend to think I have come to the perhaps odd view that the bureaucratic process, the administrative apparatus, the research, the collaborative things is a really important part of doing a kind of form of justice and honor to the objects and to the human remains. It's also the case that an institution needs to make sure that they're repatriating to the right people, right? And that another claim doesn't appear, you know, later down the road. So you want to make sure that this is right.
Harvard Peabody claims it has repatriated about 30% of its collection. The Association of American Indian Affairs says that number is closer to 15%, and the museum may be counting remains it's coordinating with other museums. But for Sea Alaska Heritage President Rosita Worrell, who worked in the Harvard Peabody Museum, the overall impact is clear.
You know, it was embarrassing for me because, you know, I am from, I mean, I have a close affiliation with Harvard. And to see that they had 5,000 human remains after 30 some years, you know, that was, you know, I was horrified when I saw that.
NAGPRA is intended to give tribes a pathway to return and repatriate cultural objects and remains, but it isn't without its problems, and tribes still have a lot of work to continue fighting for repatriation. Coming up in the next segment, we'll take a closer look at the ugly history of colonization and how it's impacted repatriation efforts in Alaska. In Alaska, repatriations can range from as small as an individual bone or skull up to hundreds of sets of remains. We talk with experts about how colonization's dark history has complicated repatriation efforts. Between 1910 and 1941, Czech anthropologist Alice Herdlicka curated the U.S. Museum of Natural History. In the 1930s, he removed remains of more than 1,000 individuals and funerary objects from Larsen Bay and brought them to the Smithsonian Institute. In the early 1990s, the Smithsonian Institute returned many of those remains to the community. Here's former Larsen Bay resident and Aleutic Museum Executive Director, April Lechtonen Counselor.
It was the first time where our people really began to understand why it was so important to have control over our own cultural heritage and by extension our ancestral remains. It took years and lots of lawyers. This was before my time. I was a child.
That repatriation request process began in 1987, and hundreds of those ancestors were put to rest in 1991. The Smithsonian repatriation isn't covered under NAGPRA. Instead, the Smithsonian based its policy on a 1989 law that authorized the National Museum of the American Indian. One of the criticisms of the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act is that it puts a huge burden of proof on tribes who may not have access to the necessary records. On top of that, the people who took those remains or other objects didn't always keep the best records. The Alaska Heritage Institute President Rosita Worrell received her master's and doctorate in anthropology from Harvard University. Worrell also worked in the Harvard Peabody Museum and served on and chaired a review committee that worked toward repatriation. She's also initiated several repatriation claims, including a repatriation of a totem pole taken from Southeast Alaska in 1899.
We even had a repatriation claim from there. We had a big ceremony. Took one of the Harriman, repatriated one of the Harriman expedition totem poles. It was from Saxman.
Worrell has sat on both sides of the repatriation table.
In my time on the NAGPRA review committee, you know, I was in meetings across the country. And it was just heartbreaking in, you know, almost every meeting where we would have tribal members, you know, begging for the return of their ancestral remains. And in NAGPRA, we do have this term called culturally unidentifiable human remains. According to the records, they couldn't figure out where these ancestral remains came from. And so Native Americans across the country would be just pleading, you know, please return our ancestors.
Worrell says that tribes have to provide, quote, the preponderance of the evidence, end quote. Tribes have to prove a claim using geographical information, kinship, biological, and anthropological linguistics. Recently, repatriation committees began accepting oral traditions.
But I will tell you that initiating a repatriation claim is quite expensive. And especially if you should, it should rise to a dispute.
Worrell had to recuse herself when the NAGPRA review committee on which she served had to handle two disputes. She says those disputes cost more than $100,000.
But a repatriation claim, it requires significant research because you have to prove with the documentation. You can't just say, this is my grandfather's clan hat. You have to prove through all the documentation that it belongs to, you know, a clan. Okay, so it's really imbalanced.
And she says museums aren't always forthright with sharing documentation. Sometimes remains and objects are collected by federal and state agencies and then turned over to a university or museum. One of those repatriation priorities for the Aleutic Museum was the return of ancestral remains from Chirikoff Island, which is about 100 miles southwest of Kodiak. Aleutic Museum Executive Director April Lactonen Counselor is a tribal member of the Shunak tribe of Kodiak. She says many of the remains were from a Russian Orthodox graveyard that eroded into the beach. Chirikoff Island was managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Following the excavation in the 1960s, the remains were taken to the University of Wisconsin.
The initial collection was done as a salvage operation, but then as many things were done in the 1960s between archaeologists at universities, they were kind of shipped around and traded around with no surviving documentation, and ended up at Indiana University at Bloomington, which was not incredibly cooperative.
Counselor says the Aleutic Museum sought the release of those ancestral remains for about 15 years before the Department of Interior's legal division became involved.
And it was a difficult thing to be there for, the final part of that struggle to get those ancestors returned, because we felt like we weren't being heard. The archaeologist who had possession of the remains seemed to feel that it was their life's work, or have some sort of ownership over the story of them. We asked for copies of all of the research documentation on the remains and the catalog, which we knew they had, and they refused.
That's when the Army Corps of Engineers performed another cataloging of the collection. Even the Bishop of the Russian Orthodox Church of America got involved. He sent a letter of support asking for the return of the remains so they could be reburied and for the records to be released.
But that whole situation made me, as a tribal member, feel a little bit traumatized, because we see these people as our ancestors. We also had done research into the Russian Orthodox Church records and found the names of people who had been buried in that graveyard in the 1800s. Some of them had living descendants.
Counselor says the repatriation process can begin a couple of ways.
Sometimes we get notified by an organization or a museum or a university that they're putting something into the Federal Register. Sometimes we get contacted by our local tribes for assistance. And in some cases, it's because they don't really know exactly how to go through that entire process.
The Aleutic Museum isn't a tribal organization. It's tribally run and tribally led, but it doesn't have the tribal standing to directly negotiate repatriation claims, unless they're doing so on behalf of a tribe. But the museum does keep up to date on potential notices. Here's Aleutic Museum's collections curator, Amanda Lancaster.
You know, since NAGPRA was implemented, museums are required to send out summaries and inventories. And so you can go on the NAGPRA website and look through their databases and, you know, search by state. You can search by museum or institution. So, you know, as part of a project we're working on right now, I've been looking through those notices and finding some that we weren't even aware of.
Repatriation claims in Alaska can be tricky. That's because some tribes recognize dual enrollment, meaning a person can belong to two tribes at once, usually a local tribe and a more umbrella tribe, but not all tribes recognize dual enrollment. That's where Shunack tribe comes in handy and makes it easier to negotiate claims. When remains can't be specifically pinned down to a particular community or village, then an umbrella tribe like Shunack can initiate a claim for the region. The tribe is also based in Kodiak, along with the Aleutic Museum. The NAGPRA registry is available to search online, but that doesn't make it less problematic. Shannon O'Loughlin is the executive director of the Association of American Indian Affairs. She says items can be categorized in a way that creates uncertainty of which tribe or tribes to reach out to.
One of my criticisms of the law is the way it's written is for summaries that the institution does not have to consult with tribes to determine what is going to be in its summary. That means before consultation, it's determining what it thinks are sacred objects, objects of cultural patrimony, right? And associated funerary objects. So then it makes its summary and then it says, here, tribes, now let's consult over the summary I unilaterally created, naming which objects should be on the summary. So that's problematic if an institution didn't want to be transparent about what it held and whether or not it thinks it has the information to name an object as one type of item or another.
On the NAGPRA registry, the Harvard Peabody Museum lists at least one instance in this collection of culturally unaffiliated remains coming from the Aleutians West region. In Alaska, remains are located at the Medical Examiner's Office, the Museum of the North on the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus, and other locations. But remains from Alaska are spread out from California to Connecticut. NAGPRA and most U.S. laws don't cover the remains that came from outside of what are now colonially imposed borders. Nor do those laws cover remains and objects that were taken from the U.S. and moved internationally. Here's Lutic Museum Executive Director April Lactonen Counselor.
The museums outside of the United States that may or may not have ancestral remains from our area are not subject to United States laws.
The law also doesn't require museums or universities to return items for repatriation in any specific way. So remains of ancestors may be returned in a box, and in some cases, boxes separated into similar parts. A community may get a box of skulls, a box of femurs, etc. One example, Counselor says, was during the Chirikov repatriation.
You know, when people get the remains back, they're not coming back in coffins. They're not coming back in the way that we are accustomed in the modern day to see our dead be treated. And I think that helped the broader community that knew about the situation. It helped them to understand, you know, you wouldn't like to see your family member come back in individual cardboard boxes.
And so communities try to give their elders and ancestors rest in the most respectful way possible. For Kodiak, the Aleutic Museum worked with the city and local tribes and native corporations to create Ancestors Memorial Park. Museum Director Counselor says it's less about internment and more about an honoring place. Some Native communities don't allow practices to handle ancestral remains, and so sometimes elect to allow a museum to store them in the meantime. It's complicated, says Harvard professor Phil Deloria, who chairs the Peabody Museum NAGPRA Advisory Committee.
So it's all complicated, as it always is. There are certain things which are under control of the federal government, which are in our collections, and many things have been repatriated. Some human remains remain in our collection at the request of discretion of tribes who have completed the process with us. And then there have been an interesting number of cultural objects, in which there has been exchange.
Almost 100 years after a Tekwede totem pole from Southeast Alaska was removed, the Harvard Peabody Museum helped repatriate it. The Cape Fox Corporation donated a cedar tree as a gesture of appreciation, and the museum commissioned Tlingit master carver Nathan Jackson to carve the tree into a pole as a symbol of the Tsanyaquan Tekwede clan and history, but also the relationship between the Tsanyaquan and the Harvard Peabody Museum.
And you know, when I take my students in to the museum, and a lot of Native students, it's an uneasy experience, for those students. We stop at the Nathan Jackson pole, though, and talk quite a bit about what collaboration, means and the ways in which can be really productive, for everybody who's involved. And, so it's, NAGPRA is always hard, there's no doubt about it. But it feels to me like things have gone well with Alaska in the past, and we look forward to doing more, in the future.
Repatriation hasn't always been a collaborative process, but as more universities and museums examine colonization's dark history and its impact on the indigenous people, many make greater efforts to consult with tribes in an effort to bring ancestral remains home. Coming up in the next segment, we'll talk with museums and cultural centers about the work that is coming out of repatriation efforts, but also preparing for a digital future. The Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act certainly has its flaws. We talk with museums and Native cultural organizations that look to the future of digital collections and repatriation. The Aleutic Museum, which is based in Kodiak, will begin to digitize its collection with the eventual goal of expanding and digitizing collections from other museums. Museum's collections curator Amanda Lancaster says they're already using a database and have most of their objects cataloged.
The press release that you're talking about is from the MUTDAT database. And so that is sort of the pilot program for making our collections accessible online. So we'll start with our ethnographic materials. We use a database called Collective Access, and they are designing, so we already have sort of the back end where we have all of our objects cataloged to some degree. And so we'll be adding our ethnographic objects to this very specific part of the database. And then later, we'd like to add Aleutic collections that are around the world. So, there's some at the Alaska State Museum all the way to France and Finland and beyond.
The database would allow people to view collections in one central place.
I'd like to kind of see like a map that, has little pins everywhere, and you can just kind of go to the pin and look and see these Aleutic collections.
Lancaster says that because some items are culturally significant, the museum can put part of that collection behind privacy firewalls so that only tribal members could access them.
One thing that sort of I just wanted to mention, because because you touched on it, is one aspect of our database that we designed specifically in mind. We can sort of set privacy settings on our database. So when we make things accessible, we don't have to make them accessible to the public at large. We can make them accessible, you know, maybe just to tribes. So that's one of the things that was really exciting about this database, is that ability to control what people can see.
In Juneau, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute began a similar process that studies physical objects through photographs, electromagnetic patterns, and other ways. The process, called photogrammetry, allows for three-dimensional documentation of cultural objects, such as carvings, which can be studied in depth and remotely. Sea Alaska Heritage Director Rosita Wuerl says the technology could potentially make older pieces held by museums available to artists around the world who might otherwise not have access to the work.
It's really time-consuming, and hopefully the technology is going to be kind of improve.
And it brings up similar questions the Aleutic Museum brought up on what to make available and to whom. An example of something that might be held behind a privacy wall would be images of clan crests. Wuerl says the Sea Alaska Heritage also does a lot of work to digitize its collection. One thing Sea Alaska Heritage has also fought for were items that are sold at public auction and sometimes on online auction houses and even eBay. In one way, NAGPRA has inspired multiple pieces of legislation. Wuerl says one piece she's working on would stop the export of sacred objects overseas.
And then another piece of legislation that we have in Congress, or before Congress, is a tax incentive act where collectors, and so we've got tax legislation in that would give additional benefits to the collectors for returning objects to us.
Currently, many collectors want to sell items, and organizations like Sea Alaska Heritage may not be able to raise enough money to buy them back. And there's nothing to incentivize a collector to donate the item at a so-called loss. But the legislation would be able to give the collector more compensation for donating an item back to a tribe or tribal organization. But in regards to the current laws on the books as they pertain to museums, Wuerl says she thinks museums are changing for the better.
So I think, you know, that some of these museums, like Peabody Essex, you know, are, you know, trying to follow the social movement that we are seeing in the country, not everywhere. But, you know, certainly it is a social movement where equity and the rights of minorities and indigenous people, you know, are being, at least they're saying they have rights, you know, and so that's progress.
She also sees changes in younger museum professionals.
You know, my colleagues are the old guys, you know, and they are just totally opposed to repatriation and to NAGPRA. But I'm seeing the younger generation of museum professionals that are much more, you know, understanding and accepting of Native American belief system.
Wuerl says she rewatched footage of a ceremony honoring the return of a 100-plus-year-old Chilkat blanket in 2017. She wanted to share that video with other museums and historians.
We saw how our clan leaders and our elders were just overcome, you know, with the return of, you know, an ancestor to our homeland. And I think it really exemplified, you know, how we see things differently, how material objects can, you know, have spirit. So
during that ceremony, a Seattle couple returned a robe to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. The exact origins of the blanket were difficult to determine, and Chilkat weavers planned to study the robe to see how it was made. For KMBA News, I'm Trip Krause.
Join KMBA News weekdays at 7:30 a.m. and 12 noon for important stories from around the state and more. Connect to the podcast at knba.org.